Conflict permeates every aspect of modern life, in our homes, on our streets, in our government, our schools, our world. Husband and wife team, Dr. Millicent Carvalho, a professional mediator and licensed social worker, and her husband, Brian Grievous, a retired police detective and former private investigator, tackle conflict of every kind in this no-holds-barred show. Join them now for Why Can't We Get Along?
Welcome to the show. I'm Dr. Millicent Carvalho.
And I'm Brian Grievous.
Today's show is about the problem of irrational exuberance for political candidates.
Yeah, that's strictly based on ideological grounds, regardless of the qualifications. Whereas if the candidates were judged by traditional measures, they would be deemed unqualified normally.
Well, could you say a little bit more about that? Because, you know, this is like the midterm elections, and we've got 2 days to election day, November 2nd, but people, I think, are just acting irrational. Everybody is, not everybody, but it seems as though more and more people are voting based on party lines or based on, you know, ethnic considerations or class considerations, and not necessarily thinking about who is the best candidate.
Well, I think it's ideological, I would call it. And this is not the first time. I think it's more pronounced now because of the advent of the Tea Party. But I think that it actually started when Obama started running. I mean, I think we talked about this before, was that I don't think people took him seriously. And by all other measures,
I think some people took him seriously. I know African-Americans, 97%, of African-Americans voted for Obama, and there were people who were crying in the street.
At the end of the election, but in the beginning of the process,
they blew him off. A lot of people blew him off, including many of the traditional, Democrats.
Yeah, they blew him off. But the reason why was because on paper and by all other measures, someone like him would not have been considered qualified for the office. I mean, not in a legal sense, but qualified in terms of what his experience was. So, and I think that if you fast forward to today with some of the Tea Party candidates, the best example would be Christine O'Donnell. They use the same, you could use the same analysis, whereas people are motivated to voting for her, but it's really kind of an irrational vote based strictly on the ideology. And my point
is, what is the ideology? To get rid of someone else?
Well, the ideology could be to get rid of somebody else or to vote the other way or support the issues the other way of what the current powers that be.
To use a candidate as a weapon against something.
That's true. And it's just, it was the same thing with Obama. He was the anti-Bush candidate. So
you saw Obama and you saw Bush.
And, well, even though Bush was not on the ballot, they managed to translate the message that a vote for Obama was a vote against Bush. Everything that was connected to Bush.
So this irrational exuberance where people are really gung-ho about a particular candidate without really giving a lot of attention to, is the candidate qualified? And is the candidate that you would vote for if you were not voting based on ideology? This is a problem. This is a real conflict.
Oh, yes, it is. It can lead to a whole lot of conflict. And I think that when you make these kind of decisions based on that, I think that sometimes you'll be sorry what you asked for. Sometimes you get what you asked for. And you're sorry that you actually got what you asked for.
So what can you do? I mean, it's almost difficult to talk to people about this issue because people are seem to be so frightened. Because this is personal. This election is about this is how it appears to me that people see the election. I mean, and maybe this is the way it always should be. But there's an irrational piece that there isn't a lot of opportunity for discussion or dialogue or debate. It just seems as though people are doing it for reasons other than is this the best candidate to meet my needs?
Yeah,
it's like a tic-tac-toe.
I think people have barricaded themselves into ideological camps. And once you barricade yourself in the ideological camp, you're blind to anything that may be potentially negative or flawed about your candidate. But by the same token, the candidate on the other side has their own baggage too. So there's no perfect candidate in any situation. But I think that there has to be an objective measure of what a candidate actually stands for, and not simply on the ideological ground.
Well, this is really bothering me. And I just want to just remind our listeners, you're listening to Why Can't We Get Along? And I'm Dr. Millicent Carvalho.
And I'm Brian Greaves.
And this show is really trying to address conflict. Conflict in the home, conflict in the streets, conflict in political arena, and conflict around the world. And as a voter, I'm frightened because my ideal candidate doesn't exist. Just doesn't exist. And I'm frightened because it doesn't matter what party I think of, be it a Democrat or a Republican or even independent, I don't see my vote counting in the way that I think it should count, because I think there's so many things that are going on behind the scenes that make my vote irrelevant in terms of how policies are going to affect me and the candidate that I vote for. So it's almost I'm trying to be a little bit strategic. And it, in a way, it is like tic-tac-toe. I can't necessarily win, but I can prevent some other candidate from winning. That would be the worst case scenario.
And sometimes those are the choices that you actually have, it's sad to say. Sometimes it's voting against someone in as much as it is voting for someone.
But that's what it seems like the Tea Party is trying to do. It almost kind of in the same kind of a Saul Alinsky way, you know, kind of make a change, you know, kind of infiltrate and make a change, but not necessarily happy with the people that you're making the change with.
I don't necessarily agree with that, because I think within the Saul Alinsky methodology, they actually have an objective of trying to, you know, bring forth a socialist type of a agenda. And what they will do anything, and from like a Machiavellian perspective to destroy the opponent. There are whole different methodologies to doing that. Whereas the Tea Party, I think, is basically trying to stop the government from basically taking away some freedoms of things that they feel that people in American society are entitled to by constitution. So that's where
freedom of choice, freedom of,
yeah,
you know. But it's so interesting because this whole thing about the healthcare. On one hand, you know, there are people who can't get access to health services. On the other hand, if you have a good health plan, or you're able to buy your health plan, to have the government determine what your limits are or what access you can have, many people are not used to that because they're not into the Medicare or Medicaid program. They're independently through their employer providing, getting health care. They're not used to the government making those kinds of decisions about them. I know, you know, HMOs, and you get a sense of it because you can't get certain medications because it's not approved. But this health care, I think, is frightening for many people because it seems as though the government is going to determine what kind of care you should get and what are the limits of that care.
Yeah, and beyond that, in the larger question with respect to that particular issue with healthcare is that the government is basically going to initiate a fine, which is actually translated to a tax, and that's what they've indicated in court. They're going to tax you as a result of refusing to participate in Obamacare, basically. So, therefore, you're being compelled. You will be fined. You will be taxed. And if you don't comply with fining and taxes, well, you know what happens. You don't comply with the IRS, and you have a tax that you don't pay. You know, there are consequences.
Well, see, I'm not used to those consequences, because if I'm a person who thinks I should have freedom from the government, and because I'm self-sufficient as much as I can be, that really bothers me. Even if I'm going to get a benefit from it, even if you tell me that this is going to benefit me, the idea that I'm going to have limitations on my freedom to make choices about my own health care.
Well, just I'll put it like this. It's just like when you're a kid, and your parents are going to give you a beating. They're saying, this is for your own good.
No, they used to tell me, this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you. I never got that then, and I certainly don't get it now. And you know, and I can see why people are becoming irrational, because people are desperate. You know, you look at neighborhoods, or you go to the supermarket and you look at what people buy, and you look at the angst that's on the faces of many people. People are pinching pennies. It's not, yes, you know, and on Friday night you see people, you know, just trying to get through that weekend and maybe getting a six pack where they might have gotten a case of beer before.
And beyond that, you know,
really pressured.
You see businesses that have a couple of $1 trillion in cash and money that they were not investing because they are petrified because they do not know when the next shoe is going to drop with respect to the Obama administration, Obamacare, and the taxes and all these things. So they businesses plan ahead. So that's causing them a great deal of consternation. And, you know, hence you have this Tea Party movement. So there are legitimate reasons why these people have sprung up from all different walks of life in all different parts of the political spectrum, because you have Democrats, Independents, and Republicans involved in this, and they're just as anti-Republican as they are anti-Democrat.
Oh yeah. I have nothing against the Tea Party. I'm really talking about for just about everybody, and not just Tea Party folks, but this whole idea of voting based on ideology and not necessarily voting based on the right person, and the news media feeding into it by trying to make the news and develop candidates in a way other than just reporting what's going on.
Oh, sure. I think the media tries to ride the wave. And if they can ride the wave of the publicity that's come out of a Tea Party candidate, and they can put a little spin on it, they will definitely try to do that to get some more attention, some more media attention.
But it's not just media attention. It's, you know, if when I sit and watch the news show, my blood pressure goes up, because, you know, it's almost as though people are really trying to pull at my strings, the newscaster, pull at my strings, make me afraid, make me terrified, like be afraid, be very afraid of this candidate, you know, and I don't really get a chance to hear what the person's views are or how they voted on a particular piece of legislation, so I can make a decision as to this and whether or not it's going to be the best person to represent me and my interests.
Yeah, I think that with the kind of thing where you have the government actually compelling, making historic landmark legislation for the first time that it compels somebody to do something and getting ready to fine and actually tax somebody for not doing something. You know, I could see if you purchased something or if you did a transaction or something like that, then you get taxed for it. But you get taxed for doing nothing, that is a serious issue. And that's why I believe that.
And see, we're not talking about a welfare system. We're not talking about people. People who have been in public systems have always been controlled by the government.
Exactly.
If you're in the child welfare system, you get controlled by the government. If you're in the welfare system, you get controlled by the government. Food stamps system, you know, Medicaid, Medicare. But most people who are independent, and I guess you could say people are not always as independent as they think they are, but if you feel like you're buying your services and you're buying your health care based through your employment, that you have freedom from the government telling you what to do. Even if that means that you have limitations on the services that are available to you, at least you have some choice.
So in with respect to how to frame this, with respect to the Tea Party candidates, there's a litmus test that you're against the bigger government and government involved in
government's bad.
And anything to do with government taxes. And regardless of what your background is, then you are the candidate. Now
all I have to say is I'm against government,
exactly,
and you need to vote for me because I'm going to go in there and I'm going to make a change.
The more,
but what am I going to do differently?
The more you espouse to that, regardless of what your qualifications are, you're qualified as per this litmus test with respect to the Tea Party. The other part of the spectrum is this. If you are for everything that this current administration in Washington stands for, and actually very left-wing sort of socialist type of policies, the more you do that, then the more you meet the ideological litmus test of the left wing. And that's what you're looking at. You're looking at, regardless of what the person's background and what the qualifications are, it would be nice that you can have these ideological positions, but be qualified. You know, that would make it a lot easier, but it becomes scary when you see someone
that you know is definitely not qualified. And someone that you believe that 3 years ago, people wouldn't even give the time of day. But now, if that person can win and that person can be used as a weapon against something, then we're going to go for that person, even to our own detriment.
That's true. And I think from a large
extent... That's irrational.
To a large extent, that's how Obama won, because he was anti-war. And the other
thing, he won. I've had this conversation with a couple of people, and I was wondering, you know, is he, in the minds of some white people, did he bring some sense of, when I say redemption, I mean,
or closure.
Closure to a history that we're all kind of ashamed of in a way,
I think it served a dual purpose. I think that it was the perfect storm and the plans were aligned that year. I think that anybody that voted for this war that was based on weapons of mass destruction in connection to Al-Qaeda in 9/11, anybody who voted or supported that process, they were toast. And he was the only person, because he was not around.
But he was an unproven person. Doesn't mean that he wasn't necessarily qualified, but he was unproven.
That was the only litmus test, and that was the litmus test that made him qualified in the ideological world. And that was extreme.
In a way, he never got a chance. He never really got a chance.
Well, he had a chance. He had a supermajority in the Senate, and He had the House of Representatives, so he had the trifecta in terms of power, which rarely happens. So there wasn't a single piece of legislation that he could not pass or any law that he could make. But he made his choice with respect to Obamacare and the other programs.
In all fairness, I mean there have been presidents prior to President Obama who have attempted to get health care passed. I think the problem is when we think about who we are as a nation, when we think about socialized medicine, it really isn't part of our fabric. Even though I think we know intellectually that people need to have health care, but we haven't figured out what do you give up, what do I give up in order for the other person to be able to have health care.
Let me just say this much. That approximately 50% of every person, every man, woman, child in this country is covered by some form of government health care already. That's pre-Obamacare already. So that's 150 million people that are already covered.
What about the other 50%?
The other 50, it's a combination of people who have their own, who are self-insured, and there's a small slither of maybe, I think something like 7% who don't have health care.
Then we should, as a nation, try to figure out how do you help those people? Or someone else to make changes that we're not necessarily going to be happy
with. But I can tell you this much, that there's a certain percentage of those people who choose not to get any health care at all. And then there's another percentage of people
who... I don't agree with that.
Well, I'm just telling you,
when you say choose, some people choose because it's too expensive.
If you're a young kid who's 30 years old, has no wife, no kids, and you make $60,000 or $75,000 a year, and you choose not to get health care, then, you know, why? Because you're healthy as a horse, and you run, you jog, you know, and you don't think that you need any health insurance.
So that person gets sick. They had a catastrophic situation.
When that happens, that's true. But what I'm telling you is that in their mind, they don't feel the necessity to get it.
Because if that person has $65,000 a year, you said healthy as a horse, has a catastrophic accident or something happens, haven't paid into a system.
No question.
They haven't made any sacrifices.
No question. No question that that becomes an issue at that point in time. But I'm talking about explaining. Why they do or they don't. I'm just telling you I'm explaining the reality of those 6% or 7% of people who don't have health insurance. And then there's a small group of people who can't afford it, can't get it. But a whole lot of those people, believe it or not, and I'm just telling you just from my own personal knowledge, those people would be able to get some form of medical assistance, and they would be qualified to get it. But they either are ignorant to the availability of it, or they choose not to do it.
Well, I think a lot of it is that this information about health support, healthcare support, like through the tobacco company, for example,
that's a
big secret. You have to really hunt to find this information.
But how much is the government required to do? They already have the plan for you.
We have friends who we know don't have health insurance, and they look at their monthly premium, and they're looking at paying $1,000 a month. Do they know about Philip Morris and the opportunities that might be available to them?
Especially if
they have a chronic health condition.
If you're a person and I invite you into my home, and I said, sure, you can stay in my home and you can have anything available, and I fixed dinner for you and put a plate on the table, and you sat in the living room the whole time, and you never came to the kitchen to get the knife and fork and sit down and eat at the table, and you starved to death. Is that my problem?
Well, now it makes me think I'm irrational, but it doesn't happen that way.
But
Brian.
I'm telling you, this is that.
If only it were that easy.
It's a metaphor, but my point is that.
That's like a metaphor of thinking there's this cafeteria of health opportunities that people aren't taking advantage of. They just haven't gone to different government centers to sign up. Healthcare is a political issue because not having access to healthcare is a crime.
Medical assistance exists in this country for over 40 years.
Not everybody can get it.
But what I'm telling you is that there's a whole slew of people that are already qualified.
But do they know about it?
It's just because they never looked and investigated.
Well, this gets back to this whole idea about, you know...
So they've created a crisis.
Being irrational... In terms of trying to figure out how do you get a candidate who's going to think about you when they vote? Because when this whole healthcare thing came about, elected officials didn't seem to be voting for their constituents. They were voting because they were told that politically that's what they had to do when they voted. They didn't necessarily agree, and they didn't necessarily think about the people who elected them into office.
A lot of those people are really scared. Well, see, that's their problem. See, because they allow themselves to be bullied by whether it's Obama, Nancy Pelosi, or Harry Reid. They made that decision. They are elected official.
Republicans bully too, so it's not just the Democrats.
Exactly. Well, but whatever they decided to do, they chose to do on their own volition. They're an elected official. They could have made a choice and they could have made a decision on their own. Because the person didn't elect them to be
I'm not going to try to feel sorry for political candidates because they get a lot of perks and they have to have some integrity.
Exactly.
But I don't think it's as simple as you say, because politics is not simple. And we're seeing it now where, you know, it's all about ideology, and even candidates are buying into that. And as a voter who is thinking about my one vote, and you think about it, you have one vote. And on November the 2nd, you want to put that one vote to good use. And you're thinking, you know, how do I make my vote count? How do I make it mean something, not only for me, but for other people who think like me and who want the same things that I want? And vote your conscience.
I can say this much, is that rarely does a candidate have all the qualities that you're looking for.
But what are you going to be thinking about when you go to the polls on Tuesday, Brian?
Well, the one thing I have to do, and I have to kind of share partially with the strategy that the Tea Party is, and that's to vote against somebody who I definitely do not want to
see. But that doesn't mean how are you going to vote against? Why not vote for the person that you want?
By virtue of voting for one person, that is
it's going to be a battering ram against the other person.
Yes, it will. That's
what that'll be. What happened to voting, going to the poll and thinking, I'm hoping my candidate wins?
Well, yeah, they become my candidate because it's anti the other.
It's candidate. Like the lesser of two evils.
That's right, and that's how it is 90% of the time.
I'm just really depressed because I want my vote to mean something on Tuesday, and you want your vote to mean something on Tuesday.
Well, you know, the alternative is that you can write yourself in.
Well, okay, so. I don't want to run for political office. I wouldn't want to be under that much scrutiny. Honestly, I wouldn't want to be under that much scrutiny because
having said that, then I guess you need to have a little empathy for the people who put themselves, you know, in the lion's den, so to speak, that who are under that scrutiny, that they have to. I'm not saying feel sorry for these people, but but that's a choice that they decide to run for that office, to be in a fishbowl, to have every word and every motion, everything
scrutinized,
everything you say and you don't say, every gesture.
Can you imagine?
Facial expression, everything just becomes. It just
and things you might have said 10, 15 years ago.
It gets examined under a microscope. You know, so, you know, I was listening to a program where this guy was deciding that he wanted to run for political office. So he was talking to a buddy who was a political consultant. He said, well, you know, the first thing you need to do is do opposition research on yourself.
On yourself?
So what he did, when he did the opposition research on himself, we dug up all the dirt and everything
that he's ever done.
He didn't realize how horrible what kind of a person he actually was, you know. You know, he didn't realize that, you know.
Was he really a horrible person, had he been just a human being human error?
This is what your opposition will pull out, and they will throw everything with the kitchen.
Well, St. Teresa couldn't make it.
They probably would have something about St. Teresa in the convent, you know, when she was in training, you know, when she was a kid, you know. Listen, when they pulled out Obama's second grade paper that said that he wanted to be president the whole time.
That meant he had some kind of emotional.
Yeah, so he had a
delusions of grandeur years old, huh?
He had an agenda. He always wanted to be president. So
can you imagine that?
Wasn't that
Bill Clinton? Didn't Bill Clinton always want to be president? Yeah. I mean, don't we want people to dream?
That was Bill Clinton when he was 14. Obama was in the second grade, and he wrote a paper saying he wanted to be president of the United States. So.
Isn't that what we want young boys, young girls to aspire to?
It was made a negative by showing that he
was...
You can
make anything a negative.
That he had aspirations on the White House when he was a little kid. So that, you know, so everything that you say and you do actually becomes scrutiny. Because you put yourself on that pedestal.
I know.
And you know something? You know, that's okay. I mean, listen, politicians and preachers... You know, you put yourself on a pedestal, be ready for the scrutiny, okay?
Be ready.
Because you're welcoming that scrutiny. And, you know, you say it's public service is supposed to be a higher calling, but...
So that means elected officials, we're going to keep you under the microscope and we're going to hold you accountable.
Oh, definitely.
But give me three takeaways for our...
Our audience?
Yeah, give me three takeaways you're going out to things that we can learn from this show.
Know your principles.
Know your principles.
Know what you stand for and know what you cannot tolerate.
So know your principles, know what you stand for, and know what you can't tolerate.
Exactly. And if those, if the candidate in question meets those three criteria, they share the same principles that you have, they stand for most of the things that you stand for, and they don't stand for any of the things that you really have, that are fundamentally against what you believe in.
Then you can vote your conscience.
Exactly.
All right. You're listening to Why Can't We Get Along? I'm Dr. Millicent Carvalho.
And I'm Brian Greaves.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us today for Why Can't We Get Along? You can direct your comments or questions directly to Millicent at M-I-L-L-I-C-E-N-T. That's Millicent at whycan'twegetalong.com. If you'd like to contact Brian, please email him at Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at whycan'twegetalong.com. Have a great week, and remember, don't hate, mediate.